Hi, welcome to Sustainable Binghamton Radio. This is our third season, second episode. And today we will be talking about energy. So, Zach.
Hi, thanks, Adasa. Yep, this is Sustainable Binghamton Radio, WHRW 90.5. And we are joined here today by our illustrious guest, Mr. David Curry of BRISC, which also means Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition, our godfather, I guess you could say. Thanks for being here.
Yes, we're a project of the Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition, and you can find our website for this show, so you can see what guests are coming up, who was on before, on binghamtonsustainability.org.
Yep, thanks.
Sounds good.
Thanks for being here.
And on our Facebook.
Also, we are joined today by a professor from Binghamton University, Dr. John Fillo. Thanks for being here today, Professor.
Thank you.
Yeah, so back to you, Hadassah.
So who would like to start? Who would, you know, we want to get some background on you and how you got to what you're doing relating to energy.
I cede the floor.
Yes. So cordial around here.
Yeah, well, that's interesting that, you know, when you ask that question, and I think back as to, I guess it goes back to my college days as an undergraduate. I still remember very fondly, I guess it was probably around 1959, 1960. So I guess I'm sort of revealing my age here at this point. It was the there was a program here that was sort of exposed by both the U.S. and the Russians around 1958, 1959, called Atoms for Peace. And in the Atoms for Peace, there was a, how should I say, an opening up of the revelation of various work that was going on in both the United States and in Russia as relates not necessarily to nuclear energy, the fission energy, but it had to do with fusion energy, the an area that probably is not that well known, that actually, it's the process that sort of fuels the sun. It's the prime mover, if you will. And so the issue was, could we somehow harness fusion here on Earth? And lo and behold, it was revealed that work already had started in the early 1950s at Princeton. And the Russians, of course, were working on it. And there was my understanding that there was some agreements of kind of sharing information, et cetera. And I remember hearing a lecture and by a somebody from GE at the time. I think his last name was Hurwitz, if I'm not mistaken. And he revealed at that point sort of the experiments that had been going on, what was happening. And so my imagination was perked, if you will, mm-hmm. about energy. And subsequently, in my master's PhD work, it was energy related, not in fusion, but what was then a kind of an interesting topic in what was called magnetohydrodynamics. It was using electrically conducting fluids affected by magnetic fields as an energy, sort of energy source, I'll say. And then as time went on, I found myself in Texas, in El Paso, Texas.
Ah, my mom went to UTEP.
And I has been teaching at UTEP and was wound up doing some consulting work for the El Paso Natural Gas Company. And this was a time at which they were interested in bringing natural gas from the North Slope in Alaska. Mm-hmm. We were drilling for oil at the North Slope. But at this point, they were simply flaring pretty much the natural gas, or they were putting it back into the ground and weren't doing anything. So the interest was, let us get the natural gas from the North Slope. And so El Paso, one of the projects I was working on that was of concern to them, that if you put buried pipelines in the permafrost, would it, quote, melt the permafrost? Mm-hmm. How would the permafrost be affected? And so I got involved with studies of trying to look at, I'll call it, heat transfer problems in the permafrost. Mm-hmm. It was kind of interesting because they had two options at that time. One, which they were talking about liquefying the natural gas in the port of Valdez in Alaska, putting it on barges, and then shipping it down into California, and from California distributing it throughout the 48 states. The alternative was to build a pipeline from Valdez through Canada, connecting up in Montana, and then distributing it to the rest of the United States. Well, lo and behold, I only worked on that briefly because within 2 years I left El Paso and wound up going to Brookhaven National Laboratory. And at Brookhaven, this, I might add, was at the time of the so-called energy crisis here in the United States. The problem of people were standing and waiting in gas lines and trying to get gas, et cetera. And so I wound up in the fusion energy area. Lo and behold, something I'd heard about many years before as an undergraduate, and now I'm working in it, and it had to do with designing fusion reactors at that time. And actually, not only just for the fusion reactors, but looking at means of using, if you will, the thermal energy from the fusion reactor also as to both, I'm going to say, electric and thermal energy, for splitting water into its base constituents of oxygen and hydrogen, because it's recognized that hydrogen is the prime source, if you will, for any synthetic fuels, let alone using hydrogen on its own. And so after 10 years, I left Brookhaven, came to Binghamton, and started. I was a founding chair of mechanical and industrial engineering, stayed there in that position 10 years, went on then as the associate dean for research here in the engineering school. Officially, I'm retired. but
you're still teaching. That's how I found you.
I'm still teaching. I then still continue to work in the dean's office, and now I'm the chairman of bioengineering. So that's up to date.
And I found you because my hobby every semester is to look through the bookstore and look at all the books and try and see which courses I would take if I could take extra courses. And I saw your books for a scholar's course that you're teaching that hopefully we'll talk about a little bit more later. So we'll hear David's introduction.
So my history is not nearly so erudite, but... But I actually grew up in a oil family. My father was an economist and statistician. I was born in East Africa, and he was working for the British government at that time, and a graduate of the London School of Economics. And we returned to England, and my father was casting about for a job. And was finding it difficult to find something that he liked or was interested in England. And a professor of his had come across the pond to New York and was one of the pioneers in planning. The oil companies sort of broke the mold and started the real planning departments, long-term and short-term planning, was a new field. So he invited my father, if he could afford it, to come to America, and he would get a job working in planning for Caltex, as it was known in the day. And so he did. We spent our last penny, arrived in the United States, and Dad launched his career in the oil business in planning. And then moved into the international division at Mobil, and then we moved back to Europe, and then they came back here. I stayed there. It was great. It was the Carnaby Street era. I loved it. It was wonderful. But he eventually retired as a consultant. His last job was for the King of Morocco, working on a project to get oil really from out of the ground to market, and putting together an integrated system for Morocco. So it's interesting that I find myself here in Binghamton involved in energy issues, and much more so than I had ever been before. But I come at it more from a consumer and also sort of the economic background and its impact on society. So as the director in the Sustainability Coalition, we're involved in the three E's, the environment, social equity, an equitable society, and the economy. And certainly energy has plays out in all three of those, but particularly in the environment and in economics. So I look at it from that standpoint. I also am one of the co-chairs of the City of Binghamton's Climate Action Plan Committee. Mm-hmm. And so I look at it from that perspective. But I guess the most formative part, though, my dad was in this business, the really formative moment in my career came during the Arab embargo when you were at Brookhaven. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Carter was wearing a sweater mm-hmm. and saying, turn down the thermostat. Mm-hmm. And OPEC was cutting oil production. And interestingly, if you look at a graph of energy use worldwide, it climbs dramatically through the centuries, except for in the 1980s when there's actually a downward trend, and then up it goes again. Right. And so it's interesting the impact of price and availability, supply and demand, on our consumption patterns. And certainly it grabbed my attention then, and I still think that we should be paying attention to our thermostats. and having lived in Europe, of course, petrol, as we call it, is a whole different price scale. I think it's now about $8, roughly $7 to $8 a gallon in equivalent, mm-hmm. tends to make you more
thrifty,
more cautious.
Energy thrifty.
More thrifty. And so I think we have a lot of catching up to do, because we clearly are the profligate nation in terms of our consumption of energy compared to the rest of the world. And I suspect will not be as plentiful nor as cheap in our future. So we'll have to deal with some of those issues in the coming generations. And then it's, what is the impact on our climate? What are our choices? What are those are some of the things that interest me.
Okay.
Great.
So maybe that I can kind of see where these things maybe can connect now. Dr. Fillo, could you maybe tell us a little bit about the work you're doing now, the class you teach called Energy in You, and maybe you just fill us in on a little about maybe what the average civilian should know about energy and these kinds of things.
Yeah. My class. The first thing I sort of try and lay the groundwork for is simply to make the point, because of which I believe, mm-hmm. I might add, is that every aspect, every dimension of our life has to deal with energy. And I might add, it's not only the fact of how much am I going to pay at the gas pump for my car or paying for electricity, but it also energy has to do with our bodies just as well. Mm-hmm. So energy is, quite frankly, in many respects, it's rather an elusive concept in many mm-hmm. respects. There's a poem by Robert Blake I always start off my class with, talking about energy.
Now we're talking.
Zach loves poetry.
Yeah. Right, Blake.
I was about to fall asleep. Gosh. Finally some poetry right there.
Unfortunately, I didn't bring the poem with me.
Oh.
But I don't remember it.
It's a research project, Zach.
we'll find that. We'll read it next week.
Yeah we can put it up as a link.
I'll give it to you.
Yeah. Okay.
But no, seriously, the issue, what I try to emphasize is that every dimension of our life has to do with energy. From the time I get up in the morning to the fact that the heating may be going on in my house, maybe cooling. I turn the stove on to turn water on, et cetera. I'm drawing electricity. I put on clothes. The clothes that I wear is energy intensive. Right. So on and on, I think with the food. And so one can see. And so it's in that context that I try to make people, students aware that energy impacts every 24 hours, even when I'm sleeping, when I'm sleeping, that there's a dimension of energy that's coming into play in my life. And so it's that aspect. The other thing that I try to also emphasize, that while I talk about the U.S. energy appetite, and as a matter of fact, I just happened to bring a few numbers with me. I don't do this to make anybody feel guilty. It has more to do with the fact, because we are an advanced technological society. And this is what I believe is a consequence of a technological society. When we talk about consuming 25% of the world's natural gas, 23% of coal, 25% of crude petroleum, 43% of motor gasoline, 26% of electricity. Wow. Now, on the one hand, one can argue and simply say, well, you know, we're using too much. I mean, sometimes that's a response. And that may be so. There may be a lot of wasteful things going on. We do know that. But the fact of the matter is, we also at this point, when I say an advanced technological society, we also talk about innovation, creativity, and what are those terms really associated with? So much of it is tied up with generating new products, right?
Right.
It's tied in with things of that nature. And so all we have to do is look at the electronics industry. And then you start looking at how the U.S. energy electricity consumption has gone up as a consequence of a lot of products, if you will. It's not a criticism. It's a reality. It's the fact. And as a matter of fact, one of the interesting statistics that I show students or tell them is that in 1980, on average, there were maybe 3 electronic products in houses. We are now up to 25 on average. And if one stops and thinks, you probably may add up to the 25.
Okay? Yeah.
Many times the multiple televisions in houses. And one looks at the iPhones and looks at all the other electronics that now people have. And it's become a part of life for many people. The other thing that I would say, when I think of energy and when it subsequently gets to talking about alternatives, I primarily think of it in terms of 3 what I call energy sectors: transportation, electricity, and heating. And why do I think of it more in those terms? Well, because if you look at the breakdown, because I'm looking at this point, my pie chart that I have here, that fundamentally, transportation is oil. All right? Now, granted, one will say, well, we still have some hybrids, et cetera. But basically, or some electric cars, et cetera. But it's oil. Transportation and oil go together. All right? The electricity side, there's a real mix: coal, natural gas, uranium, because of the nuclear side. There is, of course, the natural gas coming in there on that side too. And then the heating is, again, a mix of natural gas, wood, oil. So I think that even when we start talking about alternatives today, one really should couple in there the subsequent energy uses. Because on the one hand, if one immediately says, well, I'm just going to take some exaggeration, wind and solar. The fact is you primarily are using those on the electricity side. And so that necessarily at this point in time is not going to solve the oil dilemma with regards to the automobile.
And we were talking about this last week, that batteries are a large part of why electricity to cars is a little bit more problematic because we had Joe Weiss on last week, who's a PhD student in industrial engineering, and he converted his car, his truck, to electric. But the problem is how much battery, how much so much of the weight of the truck became batteries.
His Ford Ranger doesn't really have like the get up it used to have.
No, and that he can only travel about an hour in distance before he has to recharge because of the battery issue. So, for solar and for wind to become into transportation, it sounds like battery research is really going to be crucial.
Either battery. Well, yes, on the battery research, but. Here again, it's again for a number of years. It depends on how fast one is going to bring those into the mix. All right, and so this comes back to your point about the economics, and all of these factors are coming into play here that play together. It's a system, and one really cannot look at one independent of the other.
Mm-hmm. And I would absolutely agree. I mean, energy is like blood. It's almost like water, and actually, those will be some of the discussions that we're going to have in the future. Are about the sort of trade-offs, like we do here in our currently with the Marcellus Shale. But but we can't live in society as we know it without. Without energy, I mean, it's part of our lives, and it's here to stay.
Right.
And so the challenge becomes: what are we likely to wean ourselves from hydrocarbons? I think that's probably unlikely for a long time. They're still the most effective. Although tougher and tougher to get at, hydrofracking is one example. Tar sands would be another. Mm-hmm. It's not as plentiful. The cherries have been picked. The low hanging fruit has been picked.
Right.
But coal is still fairly plentiful, and that's being used in greater and greater quantities worldwide, mostly as a result of industrial development in China, and it has vast reserves. And most of the coal reserves in the world are in the four major industrial countries, so the U.S., China, India, and I forget which is the fourth largest, but each of those economies, and as our access to hydrocarbons diminishes, or the liquid hydrocarbons and gas, we're likely to go towards using more and more coal. We could use nuclear. Mm-hmm. It would be great if we had enormous sudden leap in technology that would allow us to tap into nuclear. But if we built, I heard this recently, if we built a nuclear facility every 2 days for the next 45 years, we would just take one little piece of the increased demand that world society will need because of population growth. So these are very, very complicated, as Dr. Philo says. They're complicated and intertwined issues of economics, of energy, of population, of consumption and conservation and all of those things. And there aren't simple solutions to them, at least as far as I can tell. And so... so it warrants that we pay attention and that we learn about this.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up the issue about population. It's a very simple calculation that one can do. For example, just take the population, and if we were to specify the amount of energy usage need for each person, for example, and gradually it's an oversimplified calculation. But if one goes through it, you soon reach the conclusion about doubling, for example, the amount of energy needed, and if not more, depending on, again, how the population grows here at this point. And that, again, assumes that people are going to sort of want and need more energy in daily usage. And, of course, we see that happening. We have developing countries. You now see on the stage, on the worldwide stage, a country like Brazil, that you hear more about Brazil as a major economic force out there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, China is the obvious one, though, too, and, of course, India, et cetera. Large populations. And
in Brazil, and we also hear a lot about because they do the sugar cane. They've kind of played a role in the discussions about ethanol and
yes.
Mm-hmm. In the U.S., especially like the corn versus sugar cane mm-hmm. kind of discussion,
so,
which is the context that Brazil kind of came to light with yeah. energy to me.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to put you in a difficult position. I don't think this will. But has all of your research and work and a life spent studying energy, which is such a political issue, has it politicized you, or maybe a better way to say it, what I really care about is, you know, what do you do in your own life to kind of in response to these issues, or if anything, if that's personal, of course, please feel free to pass.
No, I don't think it has politicized me. That's number one. As I think I was saying before we got on the station here, my objective in my class, for example, is to try and present the energy issues, try to educate students, and quite frankly, people that I come in contact. Recently, I gave a presentation at the local Lyceum here for a number of retired people. And again, it's in the context of alerting people to what the issues are. And so, no, I don't feel I've been politicized. For my own self, my own lifestyle is, it's rather interesting if I go into something a little personal here in a certain way. My life, as a matter of fact, I talked about some of the energy stuff that I was involved with. But over time, I've been involved in many other, what I call high technology areas, working. And so my whole life has really been immersed in high technology. But as far as me, myself personally, using a lot of high technology, my house is not, you know, structured around that way. Some of it has to do with I should say, personal decisions, privacy issues, the fact that my wife and I, we find at this point we could live our lives quite well. We walk a lot. We like to walk. Good exercise. And there are things that I think people need. I mean, there are choices, and I try to, again, stress this to students. I say, don't necessarily listen to me what I do. You establish your life, and you have choices. And you can minimize a certain use of things, and then there are other things that you don't necessarily have. Let me be quite candid with you. I do not have a computer in our house at this point.
Wow. Professor?
Now,
the
maybe,
engineering?
Maybe,
no
maybe,
computer?
Maybe people will say, oh, my goodness, who is this guy?
There was, I think I heard a collective gasp.
I think there's
four or five in our house.
I don't have an iPhone.
Oh.
Okay. I don't really have any pocket stuff that I carry around with me. And quite frankly, we live our life in a way that we get perfectly along. I pay all my bills, and I get along quite well. I do have a charge card. You know, I do things to use stuff like that. As a matter of fact, a banker one time made me feel guilty over the fact that that I used to pay my bills by cash, and he said, "Oh, you need a checkbook." Oh, really? Okay. So we even got things like that, but. No, I'm not, by the way, I'm not saying these things because I think I'm doing the right thing. It's just something that we still feel comfortable with mm-hmm. in the way we live our life. And I do believe people can live their lives and get along with things that minimize. There are things that we love, the arts, I love the culture things, and so anyway.
Great. Well, it's about time for us to take a quick break to put on some local music. I think our engineer up there might want to tell us what he's going to put on there. He's now in charge of our music.
And we're back.
We're back. Maybe.
This is Sustainable Binghamton Radio. You're listening to WHRW 90.5. We are joined here today by David Curry of the Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition.
And they have a Facebook.
And Dr. John Fillo of Binghamton University. Binghamton University's very own John Fillo.
Before we get back into our discussion, it's community announcement time. So if anyone has announcements that they want the general public to hear, please share them now.
Well, I certainly would. I would like to do a little shout out for Growing Health Conference that's going on October 5th in Binghamton. Mm-hmm. To expend a little energy and trot on over to the Growing Health Conference. All about food. We like food.
And that's being primarily organized by the
Rural Health Networks.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Where is that?
It'll be at the Regency Hotel. It's a full day of conference, and then in the evening it's a taste testing. And if you haven't gone to this, they do it every other year. It is fabulous.
Is that the taste of the tier?
Taste of the tier, but they have local produce, local foods. They have inns and restaurants that are serving food. There's beer, there's wine, there's cheese.
It's a good time of year.
Absolutely.
Sounds really
fabulous.
Nice.
It's fabulous. They do a great job.
And
with that.
Rural Health Network, who we just mentioned, also has an AmeriCorps program. So if you're a student and you're starting to think about graduation and you're interested in health, including nutrition and food, that is a good place maybe to make some contacts for a potential post-college job. I worked for them after, so.
And on October 21st, the fourth Thursday of every month, Binghamton Regional Sustainability has its general meeting in the DECA room at the Broome County Library. And last meeting, we actually kicked off two roundtables, sort of beehives of networks and talking and so on and so forth. And the conservation roundtable will be coming back to the group to tell us what they're going to be doing in the next year or so. And then finally, I'd like to mention that there's a new alliance that is growing organically in the Binghamton area called the Livable Communities Alliance. It's all about transportation and urban design and economics and smart growth and all of those kinds of things. There's a fascinating conference and it is on the 23rd, Saturday the 23rd, 1 to 5 at the Helen Foley Theater at Binghamton High School.
Do you know who's sponsoring that? Is that just that group? Or?
No, it's sponsored by BRISC, by the City of Binghamton, by WSKG.
Okay.
And WSKG has launched a 21-county essay contest. Vision Your Future will be awarding three prizes that day, and we'll be watching the documentary Beyond the Motor City. Filmed by producer-director Aaron Wolf, who some may know him as the director of King Korn. He will be here in person. And then we'll have a community discussion and conversation about things related to livability and planning our future, a sustainable future for Binghamton.
So I got to get that up on the webpage.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. And on Facebook.
Get
that up there.
So I think is that it for announcements?
That'll just do it for October.
That'll do it for October.
Okay.
So during the music interlude that we had there, we kind of thought of some other questions and things to talk about. Which question do we want to start with, since we may not have time to get to all of them?
Did you have any particular one, Dr. Fillo, that you thought would be informative?
Again, I'm going to focus just on the electricity side at this point. When we start, because it's tied into this question that Dave asked about renewables and where it might begin to play in the future and to what extent, et cetera. If we look at the United States as a and the kind of a breakdown of energy sources, if you will, in on the electricity side, we're not a homogeneous country. Now, what do I mean by that? If one were to look at, let's say, the use of coal nationwide and its increase on electricity side, it's a fact. It's true. But it doesn't mean that the electricity, if you will, generation, like, for example, New York State, relies on coal. As a matter of fact, because I'm happening to be looking at the numbers in front of me, this comes out of the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, that as for electricity generation in New York State, you begin to see a breakdown of hydro. You see nuclear, which plays a very large role here in New York State. You see coal to a much lesser extent. And numbers I've heard is maybe on the order of 15 to 18% on the coal side, on electricity generation in New York State. You look at natural gas, and natural gas is quite large here in New York State. You look at oil, it's down to very small numbers as for electricity generation. So the question that's posed, you know, where does renewables come in here? If, for example, you were to say in New York State, again, solely on electricity generation side, that, yes, it, maybe we could grow. For example, if you looked at the role of wind in other, by other meaning photovoltaics at this point.
Could you that explain could what grow. That is, photovoltaics?
Yeah, it's taking this energy directly from the sun and converting it into electricity.
Okay.
If that were to grow, one could talk probably about replacing the coal or minimizing the coal. But if you were, again, look at it from a national level, where, for example, in a state like Ohio, where maybe something like 70% of electricity is generated by coal, then it becomes another different magnitude of a problem. And so my own, if one, again, sort of, thinks about the country as a whole, as to where what that energy mix will be. My own, how should I say, projection into the future mm-hmm. is that it will be a mix. Quite mm-hmm. frankly, it will be a mix, because it's hard to see how you could, for example, replace in some places certain energy sources just by the renewable side. But I think that's something that I only became aware of, I should say, more recently, about this issue that that we're not a homogeneous nation as far as energy usage is concerned.
Dave, during the break, we talked about, you know, kind of maybe starting the other conversation alongside the energy conversation, and that other conversation being, do we need to scale back? You know, like, it's one thing to diversify energy use and try to, you know, make things more efficient and better technology, but there's also the consumer question. I don't know if you have anything you want to say about that, or if you want to talk about how the conversation's going locally. I know you're kind of tuned in because of Brisk.
Yeah. So I think actually it came through something that Dr. Filo said about a lot of the energy that we demand today is tied into the creation of more goods. Mm-hmm. And so is that a sustainable practice? Are we going to be able to create more goods indefinitely? And certainly, from Brisk's standpoint, you know, we advocate for a full integrated resource management plan that tends to look at every product and say, how can we minimize
waste,
get towards zero waste, recycle, reuse, think about the longevity of what we're producing and making producers or having producers be responsible for them. So those are some things that we're getting involved in. But I think there are many simple steps. We're looking right now at trying to bring to the Broome County region a program that is in operation in Tompkins County, and that was designed by the Cornell Cooperative Extension there, and we refer to it as Energy Corps, and we're hopeful that will come to our area sometime next year or perhaps the year after. But it's really about sort of integrating the whole idea that we as individuals can, if we know what we need to do, can take action to reduce our energy consumption in our homes, and then take actions to retrofit, to seal, to do all kinds of different things, to look at, you know, the simple stuff like Jimmy Carter used to say, you know, so turn off the appliances that you're not using, turn down the thermostat, put on a sweater instead of turning up the heat another
few
degrees.
There's something to be said about the seasons. One of the things I love living in this area is that we do experience all four seasons.
Yeah.
And you don't experience them if you don't feel the cold and the heat.
And the heat and both, exactly. So. And we do tend to insulate ourselves. Yeah. And that has other side effects in the quality of our life. So those are all issues that we contend with as a society and as a sustainability coalition. Obviously, we contend. And I think there was another thing that was brought up in our conversation, and that is the need for each one of us to become more educated about and less oblivious, perhaps, to how the world works. This idea, for example, that energy is absolutely necessary, and then pursue that line of thought to its to a deeper conclusion. How are we using it? What is my responsibility? You'd ask that question, Zach. How do we interact with our environments, both the created environment and the natural environment? How do we interact with those? So those are all absolutely critical areas of thought, of endeavor, of pursuit in the 21st century. We're not going to be able to get away with not considering this. I think one of the big ones I mentioned earlier will be water.
Right.
Enormous issues with respect to our lives. It was a wonderful – this is just a little aside, has nothing to do with energy, but there was a wonderful issue of National Geographic magazine recently, and yes, I still read it and get it at home. It's a wonderful magazine. I enjoy it immensely. But it was on water, and Barbara Kingsolver, the novelist, wrote – yeah, there, you'd like that, Zach, right?
She's good.
wrote – and the opening statement was that the rain that fell on the dinosaurs is the same rain that falls on us. There's very limited amount of potable water on the surface of our planet that keeps getting recycled, so we need to consider that a precious resource. Mm-hmm. So it's this – I think the intellectual pursuit, but also – becoming curious and becoming involved in those things are really what is, I think, the hope for our civilization. And
I guess the hope from the show, too, is that people be curious and go and think more about energy and read more about energy. We just got the 5-minute warning. Because we were talking also during the break about how – because energy's become a big political issue because it's so important to everyone's lives, it's been reduced, I think, for a lot of people down to sound bites that aren't particularly meaningful, and that the longer thought process isn't happening.
Right.
Yeah. The longer discussions aren't happening.
Yeah, and the deeper exploration of those things. Yeah. The understanding, for example, we treat it as a product, but it's not really a product, is it, energy? And mm-hmm. is it owned by someone, or is it something that we all own in common? All of those kinds of questions that we really ought to be asking, not just about the natural resources in terms of, you know, hydrocarbons, but also the water and mm-hmm. our air and population. We talked about population. These are all issues of enormous significance in our, and more so, I think, in our grandchildren's lives. I mean, I have grandchildren, so, you know, I think that's really the big, mm-hmm. you know.
So we got the 5-minute warning, and it actually looks like it's a one minute Ooh. Left. So does anyone else have any concluding statements?
Yeah, I just like to add, I'll throw one more problem in.
Okay,
to think
let's
about.
Hear it.
Throw it on the pile.
and it has to do what I call the energy water connection. And I'm just going to again throw out a number here at this point that we use something like 39% of our fresh water for thermoelectric generation. Probably
is that in the U.S. or is that worldwide?
That's U.S.
That's U.S. Okay.
Yes. And almost an equal amount on irrigation too. So, you know, the energy, the water energy connection is going to become even more of an issue as we start moving on. As I might add, even renewables, we could get into a whole other discussion with that as well with regards to the water connection.
Maybe we'll have you on next semester. It sounds like we need to have you on again.
It does sound like that. So. All right. Well, Dr. Philo, thank you again. David Curry, okay. thank you so much.
And yeah.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you.
And to learn more about what's going to be going on and to see updates from different groups and bands that have been on our show, check out Sustainable Binghamton Radio on Facebook.
Absolutely. We'll see you the same time next week. Thanks.